Go ahead and call the next case.
8-3-1-0-4-0-3-9-7-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-9-
15 minutes as far as presentation of your argument. 5 minutes is reserved to appellant counsel. If you wish to use that for rebuttal, please state your name and which party you're speaking on behalf of before you begin your remarks. Mr. French, you have the floor. Thank you.
My name is William French. I represent the appellant, Martha May Kotchadi, in this case. These parties have been up to the Court of Appeals before, kind of on similar facts. But if I could just say an analogy.
Well, isn't that kind of the whole nuts and bolts of this, up to the Court of Appeals before, kind of on similar facts? That's the whole argument today, isn't it?
No, it's not. For this reason, let me use an analogy. We use these before juries all the time. I hope it's helpful to the court. If two people were driving cars and collided at an intersection and a lawsuit arose out of that accident, there would be one lawsuit. If they drove another block and there were another accident, we've seen the same two drivers, and an action arose out of that accident, it would be a different case. There are two cases here. There's the first case. Ms. Kotchadi was a victim. Judgment was entered on April 15th of 2022. I appealed that the next day, and my reading of the statute is that a stay was automatically imposed by virtue of 504B.371 subdivision 4. So there was a stay that was imposed. The landlord here wanted to proceed to take possession. Ms. Kachadi's tenancy was still active, although she wasn't living there. There's kind of an unusual fact situation here. Ms. Kotchadi had to leave the apartment because of a water leak. She left, the landlords repaired it, but before she could move back in, the landlord brought an action to exclude her from the property. Not under the typical eviction process, but under kind of a little subdivision of a statute that I was totally unfamiliar with, to be honest with the court. So she lost. The court, almost miraculously, I think, issued findings, very detailed findings of fact, conclusions of law, very quickly. But we appealed the case. There was a stay. When Ms. Kotchadi went back to resume her tenancy, she was excluded by the landlord. The locks had been changed, the lock to the garage had been changed, the mailbox lock had been changed, so she was excluded. So the question becomes, what should the landlord have done? The landlord should have applied to the court for relief from the stay under 504B.371 subdivision 7. The landlord did not do that. And I think the Gay case is right on point on this and shows the procedure that should be followed. In that case, the landlord prevailed at trial. There was an order of eviction. And because the landlord wanted to proceed to take possession, the attorney for the landlord applied to the court for relief from the state, which was granted, and the landlord had to pay a certain amount of money into court. So that was all accomplished in this case. Now, back in November of 2022, this court issued an opinion. I call it the Britton case, B-R-I-T-T-O-N. It was a published decision, and it's been cited by both cases, all parties. And it really speaks to this issue again. Under what circumstances does a landlord is a landlord able to retain possession of property after a stay? And then the ultimate question for this court is, what are the consequences to a landlord of not following the stay? I thought, and I believe strongly, that if the landlord does not seek relief under subdivision 7 of the statute, and goes and takes possession, excludes the tenant, and then takes possession, that landlord is subject to the whole litany of statutes under the landlord-tenant statute that apply to a landlord illegally ousting a tenant, and so on and so forth. So we asserted, I don't know, 6 or 7 counts in the complaint, but the complaint is based on the events of April 22nd during the stay. I think the doctrines of collateral estoppel and res judicata are totally irrelevant to this case. It's a new case with different facts and really different law. So,
well, I understand what you're saying, but you know, if the liability creating event is April 22, the same event, and you're saying we toss aside collateral estoppel and res judicata, what case law can you point us to that would support that? I didn't see any in your briefing. I'm not sure that I'm hearing it, because you do have to have authority for that position.
It's the Britton case, basically, and the Gate case. I mean, those are cases that show the procedure. And when a stay, I mean, what does a stay mean? A stay means that all activity on the file has to stop pending an appeal. That didn't happen here. They excluded the tenant, and then they went ahead and got a writ of recovery and served that. So, again, Your Honor, I don't believe collateral estoppel or res judicata have any relevance to this case. It's a completely different case, new facts, and it's all based on April 22nd and the exclusion of Ms. Cacciati from her apartment. That's the way I see the case, Your Honor. It's a fairly simple, straightforward case. I've read the Britton decision. I know that none of the judges here were authors of that decision. I read it 5 times. It's kind of enigmatic in a way.
Do you see our standard of review as de novo then?
Yes, it is. And it's specifically so stated in the Britton case. It's a de novo review by this court. I think, just to be clear, honest, whatever, I think there could be more clarity coming from the appellate courts in this state about is a stay automatic? Under what circumstances does a landlord have to get relief from subdivision 7? When does a tenant have to provide security? I mean, it's not always easy to work through this statute, and even the Britton decision, like I said, I think it's a little enigmatic, although in the appeal and in the decision, it clearly states the district court properly determined that subdivision 7 governs entitlement to possession. If the landlord in this case wanted possession, they should have applied to the court for relief from the state. And then the consequences flowing from that are as stated in the complaint that I filed.
Counsel, did your client put up any security?
No. There was never any demand that she put up security. It's not been asserted in this appeal that because she failed to post security, she loses.
Well, doesn't
that's a non-issue as far as I'm concerned.
Doesn't the statute require it in order to get a stay?
No. There's kind of a, I don't know what we call it, and that's why I'm saying this law is kind of hard to discern at some points. A tenant holding over is required to get security, but she really wasn't whole. She wasn't living there. She simply had an active tenancy. She was not living there because of the flood that had occurred in her apartment. So she had left and she wanted to go back. All her stuff was there, the stuff that had been damaged by water, and she was never allowed back in to get her stuff. And in fact, in the Britton case, that had come up, but you'll note that the tenant in that case never posted security. And the Court of Appeals found that Subdivision 7 did control the outcome, and that bond should have been sought by the landlord. Beyond that, unless the court has more questions, that's the position of the appellant.
Why isn't security required if, even though she wasn't residing there, your position is that she's effectively maintained possession?
But she wasn't. What is possession? I guess it's not been really clarified or elucidated in this appeal. She wasn't, I guess I define it as she wasn't living there. There was an active tenancy, but.
I'm trying to get a sense of why the security requirement wouldn't apply under the circumstances.
Well, it might, even if it did apply, no one ever sought to have her post security. And that even came up in the Britton case, where the tenant was required to post security, but never did. And the court went ahead and found that subdivision 7 control, and because a bond was not obtained, the holdover tenant could continue staying where they were living. Does the court have any other questions?
It appears not.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. French. We have two respondents. Are you splitting time, or is one party speaking?
Your Honor, I believe we both intend to speak. Splitting time will be fine with me.
So 7.5 for each of you?
Yeah.
Good morning.
I'm Jim.
Wait a minute until we get the timer going. Thank you very much. All right, we're ready to go. Go ahead.
I'm Jeff Hansen. I represent defendants Richard and Elizabeth Makua in this matter. The procedural posture in this case starts with appellants filing a civil claim against defendants in Olmsted County Court Case 55-CV-221339. That was tried. The court entered detailed findings on Thereafter, appellant filed an appeal on April 16, 2022 on. While the appeal was pending, appellant commenced a present civil action against defendants, raising the same claims and issues as were raised in the first act.
Why isn't the argument that the stay was not properly treated a different issue?
Because that issue was raised, argued, and disposed of by the Court of Appeals on this first appeal. Clearly disposed of. It's already been raised by this party against our parties. A Court of Appeals disposed of it. The Court of Appeals actually wrote a couple paragraphs explaining that it's moot. So while the summary judgment motions were pending, the Court of Appeals issued that decision in that case, which I've been alluding to, affirming the trial court. The trial court, now in our case, with summary judgment motions pending, issued its order and memorandum granting summary judgment in the present case, number 393. Granting summary judgment on all claims because they were covered by res judicata and or collateral estoppel. The trial court made detailed findings in support of its decision. The trial court had the benefit of and relied on the Court of Appeals decision in case 1339, which I alluded to. The trial court relied on the Court of Appeals decision and language in connection with stay. We now address the issues on appeal. The two case analogy does not work here because the two cases were involved in one and the same accident. If we want to make an analogy, it doesn't work because there's not two accidents. The appellant raises two issues. Number one, the matter of state. Number two, the matter of a bond. These are the identical issues that were raised, argued, and disposed of by the Court of Appeals in its decision dated January 30, 2023. The matter of stay and bond are moot. It's been decided. Parties had a chance to argue it. The trial court relied on this in rendering its decision. There's no merit to appellant's position in granting appellant's, in appellant's position that the lower court's decision should be reversed. Does the court have any questions?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Travis Oley. I represent the LLC identified on the caption Cozyville LLC. I was the attorney in the first case and first appeal for all parties. I just want to draw the court's attention to the original complaint that this action has sprung from. The appellant was seeking recovery of the premises.
By original, you mean in this case or the preceding case?
The very original claim that all these claims arose from that alleged these facts that the issue of the stay and the writ have been discussed. The appellant in that initial action was seeking recovery of the premises, acknowledging she didn't possess the premises. She was not granted the relief that she sought. So if a stay would have been issued, does that transmute into an order saying that she has possession? It does not. That's why this court found it moot. This court ruled because appellant was not living in the apartment and the writ was not issued until April 28th or served until May 9th. We discern no prejudicial error in the district court's directive to stay away until the order was filed. Elsewhere, the court said, because we affirm the judgment for recovery of the premises, arguments regarding a stay pending appeal are moot. That's what this court said. Now, if the appellant disagreed with this court's analysis of these issues, a request for cert should have been filed. It wasn't. So Judge Joseph Chase's decision that res judicata and collateral estoppel precluded all of appellant's issues must be affirmed. It's the correct decision. And the reason this is confusing is that the only party that would have posted a bond would have been the party that was changing the status quo in this case, the appellant. And Your Honor asked that question. The status quo remained from the prior to the action through the pendency of the appeal. She didn't occupy the property for 4 months, didn't occupy it during the appeal. Nothing had changed. There was nothing prejudicial to appellant, so I'd implore this court to affirm Judge Chase's decision. Do you have any questions for me, Your Honors?
No, and you certainly don't need to use all your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oley.
I'm not sure I said may it please the court when I first got up here, or counsel. We all know one another back here, so This case seems really complicated, but it's really simple. When a party gets an order for eviction and an appeal is filed to take possession, do they need to apply to the district court for relief from the stay? That's all we're saying, and they didn't do it in this case. The defendants or the respondents here are trying to carve out an exception to 504B.371. For what?
How does your argument square with the last two paragraphs of this court's opinion in the original case?
Well, that's talking about a stay at the Court of Appeals, applying to the Court of Appeals for a stay. We're dealing with a stay that should have been imposed at the trial court level, and which was imposed by operation of law under subdivision 4 of the statute. There was a stay. There was no effort to get relief from the stay. I think what the respondents are trying to do is to make an exception for landlords. They don't have to get relief from the stay under the circumstances of the case. And I don't think that's correct. And like I said, the stay that we're talking about is stay in the trial court, not at the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals, I don't know why, dealt with Rule 127 of the appellate rules. We weren't seeking relief from a stay at the appellate court. Again, this is a separate case.
But when this court said, I mean, why doesn't the premise apply regardless of whether the stay was in the Court of Appeals or in the district court, when this court said, based upon the determination of the court in that case, the request for a stay is moot?
That's a separate case. This is a new case. But I mean, do these two parties, for all time, from now until the end of time, always governed by the results in a trial? If they had another trial, would they still be governed by collateral estoppel?
Well, but the issue there was recovery of the premises. And the court, our court said, we're resolving that issue. And because it was resolved against your clients, there is no consideration of the stay. It was irrelevant. It was no longer in play. Why would it matter whether the stay was the one in effect in the district court or the one sought in this court?
Don't mean to interrupt, but
no,
if there had not been a second case, that would control. There was a second case. It's based on April 22nd when she went back there to resume possession. The first case only deals with the first case. Again, there was an order of eviction. Appeal was filed, automatic stay, relief from the stay wasn't requested. Appellant brought a lawsuit to seek damages because of that. That's why we're here. Unless the court has any additional questions, that's all I have.
No, there is no additional questions. Thank you to the attorneys for appearing today on this matter. It is deemed submitted. A decision will be issued in the statutory timeframe.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you.